The session that you're in is Male Only Macho. That's a working title, basically, to attract you here. There was a vicious rumor going around that the title was really Our Males Only Nachos, and that's not the case. I'm David Anderson, and this is Ray McKeever. We're going to co-convene this session, and we'll open with a song of his.
This is a song called It's Great to Be a Man. And a couple of the reasons that I like the song is because, first of all, you're here, it affirms qualities that men have, that all human beings have, in fact, that we don't associate with macho. And unfortunately, I think we associate male with macho too much. And so it expands the possibilities for men. And secondly, the phrase, it's great to be a man, I think is a tough one for men to say in their lives, because I think that underneath the feelings that we have of our own power and privilege in society, we kind of have a bad feeling about ourselves as men. There's some guilt, and maybe we'll touch on some of that today. So to affirm that basically we are good, and that it is good to be a man, I think we need to do a lot. So let's sing the song, okay? It goes like this. Alan, you are full of affection. Bill, you're nothing short of brilliant. Charlie, you're incredibly creative and caring. David, you're dependable, dashing and daring. Oh, it's great to be a man. Eddie, your efforts are always effective. Fernando, you're fun and full of feeling. Greg, you're gregarious, gentle and giving. Hal, you're a human, honestly living. Oh, it's great to be a man. Richard, you are very responsible. Stephen, so strong and sensitive. Thomas, you're trustworthy to a T, exceptionally wise and pleasing. Full of affection. Bill, you're nothing short of brilliant. Charlie, you're incredibly creative and caring. David, you're dependable, dashing and daring. Oh, it's great to be a man. Yes, it's great to be a man. It's great to be a man. So say it proud, say it clear. It's great to be a man. Es maravilloso ser hombre. Es maravilloso ser hombre, dilo con orgullo, dilo con claridad. Es maravilloso ser hombre.
Great, that's nice to know that I'm dependable, dashing, and daring. I'm David Anderson. I'm currently in transit from Los Angeles to Albuquerque. For the last 5 years, I've been working as a financial planner with Lutheran Brotherhood, and I'm moving to Albuquerque to enter a PhD program in contemporary American literature. My original impulse for this class was sort of as a carryover from yesterday's session, where some of you might have been. In terms of, my wife was raped last fall, and that's been an occasion for me to do some reflecting on what it means to be a male and some of these larger issues. Do you want to just introduce yourself?
Sure.
We're co-conveners, but this is the first time we've co-convened together, so if there's some times where we have to check out with each other, that's
right.
What we're doing.
Well, we just met each other.
Right.
A nice meeting, too. I'm Ray McKeever. I'm a freelance musician and songwriter, doing most of my work in the area of church music in connection with liturgy and worship, but writing music in thematic areas, and one of them is in men's issues. And I also work on a very part-time basis with the American Lutheran Church's Mission Discovery Program in the area of men's issues. And some of you have already seen one of the publications that I was part of putting out, and you're all welcome to grab a copy of that when you leave.
These are free, too.
So to give you kind of give you some idea of what I think about, and I do concerts and workshops and conferences. And I'm married and have one child.
The nature of what we want to do today is to proceed in a feeling of exploring what it means to be male. Share some good things, share some reflections, and celebrate some of the things that there are to being a male, as well as to examine some of the issues and stresses that we have. Part of the way that I would like to approach that is to just tell you, sort of in anecdotal or story form, what I feel are some of the high points of my own male socialization and culturalization. Not because I'm an exhibitionist, really, but because they're important to me, and you might also recognize yourself in some of them, you males. Also illustrate that a lot of this is not really complicated or high-powered. It's just at a human level. So I'm going to tell a little bit about myself just so that you can understand who I am, and hopefully this will be a preamble in some ways for what we do later in the session. I was born in 1945, and I was a pastor's kid. Are there a lot of pastor's kids out here? As a pastor's kid, I learned that to be, in my particular case, to be obedient was the first rule, and to be kind was the second rule. And those were far, far more important than being honest or having your own opinions. Also, in terms of my father, there was a real confusion between God the Father and my own father. And there was the love that I received from my father came to me through Jesus. And I can remember having one dream at one point where my father and I were standing and Jesus was in between us. And I jumped up and bit off Jesus' ear because I felt that the love for my father was mediated only through Jesus. But I grew up in a real comfortable family. It was the post-war boom. There were not a lot of large political issues. My heroes and models for maleness were primarily athletes. I'm from the time of, and I lived in Los Angeles, so Duke Snyder, the Los Angeles Dodgers, primarily figures in sports. Plus, I had the good fortune in my 12th year to have escaped Little League and not played actually under pressure. We had made a little move and I didn't qualify for being in Little League. So I played just sandlot baseball all summer, and it was just an idyllic place in my life. And it ended when I had a wet dream at the end of the summer and had my first real secret that I didn't want to share with anybody. I'd been prepared for it. I'd been given a book on a Christian boy and sex, you know, but when it happened, I wasn't quite ready to talk about it. And I felt strange. In my Boy Scout troop, I learned that I wasn't the only one then who masturbated. And that was the primary thing that I learned in Boy Scouts. There was be prepared mentioned over here. Not that there was anything really, you know, groupy going on or whatever, but just that in the conversation it was alluded to and I discovered I was not strange. But it began a long period during which I talked to nobody honestly about my feelings of growing up. Being in Southern California, the minute I turned 16, I needed a car and had to start dating. I didn't really want to, but that was the social pressure. And I dated women who were primarily in the church, and I finally started going steady in my senior year with a woman who was in our congregation. And I started, after you date long enough, I started petting and was starting to have some real questions about who am I, what is this relationship. And my girlfriend told me that she did not want me to talk to my father about this, since he was the pastor. If I talked to my father, she was going to leave our church, and she just said that. Well, it would have been difficult to have talked to my father about this anyway, and I might not have. But that sort of clinched it, that I did not talk to my father, or to any of my friends and remained in isolation during that time. Then I went to college and I met the woman that I'm married to now, Janet, and in the course of getting to know her, had my first probably honest relationships about male sexuality, about relationships in general. What I discovered after we were married is that I had received a strong model for marriage and relationship from my father and my mother. Now, it was a tone, a hum, if I can get it quite right. No, it's a little lower. That was the model for relationships that I had. It was very steady, a monotone. The woman that I married had a different model for relationships. She believed in having things out in front. She believed in arguing. And the first 5 or 6 years of our marriage was learning how to discover to fight cleanly and to share feelings. And that was important to me because I entered the marriage believing that I could teach her to hum like myself. And I put a lot of energy into believing that that was the way to be, and I simply ran out of energy, thank goodness. So I no longer believe in that model. During the 60s was a time, another spot in which some of the encounter groups and the consciousness from the women's liberation movement gave me the message that feelings were important. And I was married to a feminist, not that she carried the banner of a feminist, but that she stood up for her own feelings and her own rights, and that made her a feminist. And what I was in touch with was the amount of pain that she had to go through to stand up for her own rights. Probably the next thing that influenced me in a major way was being present at the natural birth of my son. And that's something that's happening a lot these days. Now, I was very lucky because our son came about 10 weeks premature. We had just signed up for the class, and when we realized we were going to have to go to the hospital that early, I was in a totally upset state. I couldn't remember which toothbrush was mine or my wife's for her. I grabbed the Lamaze book and stuck it in my back pocket, and off we went. And I got to be in the delivery room by good luck. What struck me at that point was that I was included in a major mystery. You know, here was the mystery of incarnation. And I was involved in it. I felt immediately sad for my father, who had been included out, who had gone to the hospital, which is primarily a place where sick people go, and had been waited out in the waiting room. And here I was included in. I was tremendously impressed with the energy that it took. The next day when I walked around in a supermarket, I looked at all the women out of the corner of my eyes with a new sense of awe, thinking these are all mothers who have been participative in this type of event. It also reflected on me a way in which women are taught by their bodies that there are cycles, and they learn to live in more of a cyclical fashion. My body has some cycles, true, but basically it's not cycles. As a male, I worked, you know, all that summer in baseball, I was getting my muscles hard, I was getting myself up to a certain peak that was strong and lean, and I was going to maintain that. Any change in my body was downhill. It was deterioration. You know, that's how I perceived change. And so, you know, there's a very elemental message there. The other thing that happened out of that birth was that I had a rush of feelings to nurture for my son and for my wife. And I didn't create that. It just was in the event, and it was given to me like a gift. And part of my reflection on that is realizing that this nurturing part of myself is the part that now, at age 39 and being a grown-up male, being a responsible taxpayer, I still am a remedial, person in terms of nurturing myself, taking care of my own feelings, knowing what they are, when they are, and relating to other men in terms of their feelings and knowing what they are. I can have a ton of conversations with my business colleagues about business, but when it switches to feelings, it's a different story. I arrive finally at the place where we've had this event of the rape, and the way I reflect on that is that at this point now, 9 months afterwards, that what I feel is a complicity in a continuum. And the continuum has to do with the privileged place that we males have in society, that has to do with control. And so we sit at, and there's a line. Now there's an extension over here where it becomes sick. And I don't feel like I would rape anybody, and I don't feel guilty as a male. But what I'm talking about is the place in my lives where I know I have control, socially, politically, in the church, so that any woman who's going to come and do something that I'm going to do is going to have to work twice as hard as a male just to get the same position. Now that's changing, and we're in a good time for that, but that is part of this control. Now the bad thing about that control is it is exercised outwards, and it's exercised inwards on myself, so that I find myself being in a place where I'm groping now to make myself more fully human in terms of feelings, and also in terms of relating to men. And I don't mean to exclude women there, but I'm talking as a male. And at this point then, what I arrive at, I forgot where I'm arriving at. I think I've arrived at the end. That, you know, this sort of gives you a backdrop, a little bit of where I am and how I feel hopeful in that we males now have a chance to try to work on nurturing ourselves first, and then from that viewpoint dealing with some of these other issues of control. Now I think I'll throw this over to you from there.
Your statement about not knowing where you're arriving is very familiar. You kind of leap in by faith. Reminding me of one of the things that I've learned this last year that's been very helpful to me in terms of, you know, you have to have it all together right now, and you have to have the answers and everything tied up. I heard someone once say, you know, I feel a great deal of permission in myself if I just acknowledge that what I'm doing now is I'm just practicing for the next time. In other words, I'm always in training for the next event, so you don't have to be perfect this time. We just need to be putting it out, and there's no final product.
Process.
Well, I'm going to sing the song that I sang however the days go around here, the night before last. And we're going to do that partly because one of the areas that I feel like I've delved into in order to find out more about myself as a male, in parts that I never knew really existed because of kind of the stereotype that I'd been put in, you know, very much what you were talking about growing up, has resulted in a lot of conversations with my father. And it seems logical that would take place because my father is who I'm groomed to be. He's my closest male model. So he informs me about what it means to be a man in the world as I observe him daily while I'm growing up. And then also the way I relate to him, the things I can talk to him about, also in some ways models what men can be with each other. And if he doesn't help me understand that we can be a lot with each other, which I don't feel like he did, then I don't know how much I can be with my male peers and things like that. So I guess one of the things I never felt was much nurturance from my father. other than as a provider of money and so forth. And that's kind of where the song came out of. It was an attempt to ask him for more nurturance. So I'll sing the song and then we'll do something with it. And allow yourselves to try to get in touch with your own feelings, either as a father or as your father, whether he's still alive or is not. How deeply do you love me, Father? Is there more than you might show? I have never heard you say it. How am I to know? You've lived on my perimeter with words of praise or reprimand. Was this your way of loving me? Oh, how am I to understand? I've seen you working hard and long, providing for your family. Bread and meat and words of wisdom, is your loving them to see? I think I know, I think I see, I think you love me true. Still, I'd like to hear you say, I love you. How deeply do I love you, Father? Is there more than I might show? You have never heard me say it. How are you to know? Many times I've tried to earn your praise, conform to your command. Was this my way of loving you? Oh, how are you to understand? Now I am on the outside, knowing your responsibility. And bread and meat and words of wisdom, no, they're not enough for me. For words of love need speaking between a father and his son. And so I'd like to tell you now, I love you.
Okay, we're going to try an exercise now, and what we're going to ask you to do is to divide up in groups of two. Now, I notice a lot of people sitting next to each other that are married or came in together, so maybe you don't want to do it together. But we're going to ask you to find another person and sit down with that person and pretend that that person is your father, and take about 5 minutes to get through that person isn't your father. Maybe you're going to have to say, Dad, you changed. You know, you look like a woman now, as a matter of fact. And proceed to tell your father of some of the things that you would like to tell your father. Maybe things you already have told him, maybe things you haven't told your father. About what he was like, what you received, what you didn't receive that you would have liked to. And just see what happens with that experience. You know, reflect on both what you say as well as how you feel about what you're saying. And then after maybe 5 minutes or so, we'll reverse, you know, whoever your partner is, will then talk to you as if you're that person's partner, father. Anything you want to say to that?
Well, what I would suggest is to help to kind of facilitate the exercise would be to, that the person who's the father, not to say anything. You know, don't try to dialogue with the other person. Just give them plenty of time to say what they need to say to you. Give them your supportive and totally affirmative presence. And let them struggle. You know, if you spend the whole time not thinking of anything to say, I think that's important too. You learn from that. You know, you may learn that it's very difficult to think of things to say. And it's meant to give you an experience that nothing, there's no way to do it wrong. But if the other person just is there, I think that would be helpful.
Okay, this is going to require some commotion to seek out your partner and do this. So don't be afraid to move your chairs around or to move back a little bit. Or well, from the noise level and just as an observer watching the participation, it was animated in places, but there certainly was a lot of noise. Now, I don't know what that translated into. What were your experiences as you did this?
It's hard to talk in the first person to your father.
It's easier to talk about your father than if you talk to him.
To tell someone about
he him. Instead of you. Talk about that was the biggest barrier we had to overcome.
I think we sorry that the time was over that I could talk to my father. My father's ill now, and it's hard to talk to him. And I missed that during the last years to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And not today I had the opportunity.
Uh-huh. I felt like I had more feelings inside that was like than I was saying, but I didn't feel like you could hear. It was like simple language, and the feelings just didn't come out.
Mm. Yeah?
We both kind of regretted that our fathers didn't quite have enough time to play. Kind of were a little more than we would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't talking about fathers and that. We got into something else, but I was thinking of myself and my relationship with my dad, and I think I've always, you know, appreciated my dad's humanness.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he wasn't afraid to show me that, you know, he could get angry and he could be human. And my father's a very loving person, you know. Or he was a lot more that way when I was young. I think he had problems when I started to mature. You know, like, it was okay to touch her before she became, you know, she grew breasts and all this, but
right.
Once I started to mature, he just sort of, what do I do with her?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now that I'm married and have a child of my own and that, he's back to hugging me and touching, and he's not self-conscious anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that I still love him.
Yeah.
We were an interesting duo because this girl has a wonderful father. And he was really hurt. It's just remarkable. He is wonderful. He talks to her, and she has a wonderful relationship with him. And all I can do is cry because I would love my daughter to him, and I think he doesn't. And so it was very good that we were partners.
Mm-hmm.
She gave me a nice,
yeah,
a nice image.
I just smile when we start talking, because my father died when I was 7.
Mm-hmm.
And found out that he never really didn't know his father much at all either. And, you know, so that's, you know, kind of see that, you know, there are other people that grew up, and to be able to resonate with, yeah, I mean, I know what you mean,
yeah,
not having a father in their own. And I don't remember talking to my father much when he was alive, obviously. And I don't remember, and I haven't certainly done this kind of exercise talking to him after he died.
Mm-hmm.
no, that takes one. Missed that. I mean, it happened so long ago when I was so young that the death didn't really affect me that much. But the absence has.
Right, the vacuum.
I think it fits a lot that the feelings you expressed, David, about the. I'm getting a little mixed up with what he said and what you said, but because it's so intense right now. But the problem is that the difference between what John is talking about and what I felt was that I never talked to my father about anything that was really important.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talked about superficial things, baseball, or about, this kind of thing.
But the things
that really meant anything, my mother would take me back and say, "Now this is what your dad means."
Right.
And that's, I mean, I could, we talked about a vacuum in his life, yeah, where he didn't talk to his father, but there was a lot of, there's a difference between talking and just talk. communicating and talking, I suppose, is what you say. And I think that's, maybe that's a common experience with a lot of men, but I think that with a lot of sons, anyway, they felt it was hard to really talk about the important things.
Yeah.
Maybe the old Oedipus thing that comes up with mothers and sons, where they, mothers feel closer to the sons and so on, and talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Really their strongest feeling, because they can't even talk to them. They can't even talk to their husbands. Yeah. Right. That's where a lot of that trying of taking through with fathers and sons.
I have with my dad now are all related to what you'd call business. I mean, it's like, you have five levels of communication with somebody, but we're at the kind of the no deeper than the middle level, and you kind of what's the news and how do you feel about taxes now and he's always willing to tell me about that, but never on the feeling level, which as you mentioned I could get with my mother, and I think that there is I find it easy to talk to my daughters now. I'm one of three sons, but I have two daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a father daughter connection, and there's a mother son connection, and there's some difficulty communicating to the same sex and to different generation.
One of the things that I had a question about in the last few years as I pursue my education. It's my father that never went beyond an eighth grade education. And wondering how we would get along under those circumstances. Because my image of my father is probably a fairly macho one because he was a farmer and he was working hard and all this kind of thing. And I wonder how we would relate. And my sister has done some books to tell me, was reading a lot, and he helped her with her schoolwork and that sort of thing. And so it may have been, just fine, but I look at some of his brothers and I don't see that kind of support. It's kind of, often another one of these, adventures. And
yeah, race is a competitive issue. What about some of you, as you were the father listening, what did you experience as you were hearing this person talk to you?
The person I was with, we both had 99% very warm things to say about our fathers and happy feelings even from early childhood, and because I felt kind of warm and fuzzy inside listening to this person tell me how important I had been in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't tell him this, but I could have hugged him once. I really could have just reached over because he said some. I was amazed at how articulate he was, just kind of for spur of the moment. He had all these things to say, and that in itself touched me.
Yeah.
There was a time that I wanted to reach out and touch the other person because I was starting to get tears in my eyes with the talking about the lack of touch and the lack of hearing. I love you. It's kind of like, I really missed something when this person was doing that.
Yeah.
I felt that we had rather an incredibly honest communication person I was looking at. And I was rather, as I was being a father, I was rather overwhelmed at the amount of trust that the person was able to say all these things. And so that was like a gift.
Yeah.
And the other person went first, so I was lucky and I was able to go.
I had a very pretty daughter, and I would love to be her father. What a good feeling.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I couldn't help, when I was playing the role of the father, thinking about my own children.
Yeah.
And how they can't talk that way, how difficult it is for them to talk that way.
Right.
And how if it is possible to bridge that gap at the early ages, because we both felt that we were closer to our fathers in recent years. And as we both investigated our own roots, that we found it much easier to talk to our father in recent years.
Sometimes wonder if it isn't illusory, and that being the father of three daughters too, that it's hard for them too to express the feelings for whatever reason. Whether it's like saying who's to blame, the father or the son in this case. Sometimes we say, well, it's father's fault because he isn't like this. But is it also partly our fault because we can't seem to find ways to talk to them either? Maybe it is the father's. Talk about this as we talk about God. Is it the father's responsibility to be open enough so his children will speak? Or, does he create an environment where it happens? Or is it a matter that the child is introverted? The child, for some reason or other, has been unwilling to communicate. We know what puberty is, and we know the problems related. If you express what you go through, it's pretty hard to talk about that stuff.
Right. What triggers in me as you say that is that. I've got one son who's 10 now, and so I've raised him the way, or I've tried to, probably my wife has done more of the actual work than I have, at being very open about his feelings and knowing that he has them and exploring them. Well, now at 10 years old, I learn a lot from him because I said, well, now do this, and I struggle remedially with my feelings, and sometimes he just has them right away, and I learn from my 10-year-old partly from a process I initiated. And I don't know, one of the things I had, as we were up here, we sort of backed into a conversation about fathers. And I think within the conversation, I don't know, there's the feeling of whose fault it is disappears for me, because there's a way in which we're all sort of victims to a degree. And once the conversation starts, maybe whose fault it is disappears.
Maybe we're also all part participants in that drama, that experience, and it's not a matter of a fault or what we should or ought to do, but rather of a rejoicing in the fact that we are all gifts to one another.
Mm-hmm.
That in that process that ultimately God has initiated, we have the opportunity to grow through the years, to share and speak some of those feelings and thoughts to our parent that we find hard to do when we're younger.
Yeah.
Because it's not a matter of any fault, it's just a matter of where we are at that given time.
I think I felt really shy. I mean, when I think about now, thinking back on it, and I know things that I was talking to Paul are similar things I had with my father. I feel very shy about saying what I'm really feeling. And I'm thinking about it. I've gotten shy with my mother a little too because we disagree on so many things, but my dad is a different kind of shyness, and I feel really still like a real little girl. Mm-hmm. And I'm not so sure that what I say he's going to want to hear. I'm also feeling that maybe it's not going to be okay. It's almost like a stranger when I get down to that shyness. And yet my dad and I, like, say, talk about a lot of things, but when I'm saying I love you and feelings about that I wish I could say, I'm just really, it's not scared, it's shy.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I there's quite a variety of ages here, and I suspect that what comes out in discussions and feeling, bears on what era you grew up in and the ethnic background of your family. My father, for instance, his mother both were born in Sweden. And we grew up in the Depression years. And So there, I think that enters into it quite a bit, yeah. What feelings I expressed about him. And, so I think different eras, different ages, younger people, more education, more everything, more exposure to everything, that changes your, changes the feelings that, that intertwine.
How did the conversations that you had here relate to actual conversations with your father? Hi, Erin.
Hi, Dad.
David, did you time
it? No, I didn't. Plans dismissed.
I would say in my case, let me say in my case, probably an absence of uniform education.
Any other? I saw some looks as if the conversations that happened here were things that you couldn't really say.
There's still a possibility.
Still a possibility.
There is a possibility.
Yeah?
Very similar for me, but I think it's probably because my own kids are raised now. And I think I reached a point with my father, who is now 78, and I know he's not going to be around in a whole new year's he's like a 50-year-old in his behavior and his condition. Yeah. But I tell you, that now that I've reached the age of having my own grown children, and I talk about that to him all the time now. Mm-hmm. We share a lot of feelings now that we didn't used to.
Mm-hmm. Bill?
I can respond to that because for the last 7 or 8 years already, I've had the image every time I visit my parents that they made a very long visit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're both very healthy. They're both 72, and they dance a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They're very interested in doing things. They still have their house open mm-hmm. to people the way it always has been. So, you know, they look as healthy as can be.
Right.
I always have a sense of partying. So I want to say, you want to say big things, and then you end up not really saying very big things. And so, we really learned to do a lot more hugging than we ever used to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that says about all that needs to be said.
That's a good idea.
Good. Yeah.
And there's a lot more telephone mm-hmm. involved. Because we live 300 miles.
Yeah.
I tend to be able to raise, and even for my own daughters, because I have daughters, not sons, some of the deep things you want to say, you can't just go up and say them and waiting for the right mood where you could really say something, but I can write it and leave it on their pillow or notes. And I, part of the value, I communicate better in writing
mm-hmm.
for things like that. But also it's something they can keep to read again. Like on a bad day, and they don't think their mother really loves them, they can be reminded to you, she's going, you know,
yeah.
some special things, or even some words of wisdom, not always just love things, but I do writing.
It's about time that we need to shut down. Is there anybody that had something really pressing that they wanted to share? I sort of hate to cut this off because I'm enjoying it. Just my closing thought would be that when we look at the issues of, in the society, the larger issues of power and control and male violence, that part of what we experienced just here, the sharing and the dealing with feelings and that communication, that's just the simple secret to unlocking some of those larger issues, you know, pressed across the society, because what we experienced here doesn't happen very often. Or at least not as often as it should. I would also like to thank you for sort of cooperating with us and plunging into that. There were some pretty grimaced looks on your faces when we announced that, like, oh, I wish I'd gone to the other section. So, Ray has a closing song that we'll close with.
Since we're nearing the end of time, I won't introduce it, I'll just sing it. But I it's a song of hope, and we hold out the vision of an ability to talk with each other, whether we're parents, children, or peers, without fear, without hesitation. And this touches it between men and men. Brother, I am waiting for the moment when we will see past all that keeps us far apart. The distances we'll travel on this journey through our souls will make us whole and give us all a heart. Brother, find myself. The man in you is what I seek in time. The more you let me see of you, the more I see of me. I am yours, brother, you are mine. I would suggest that if you find somebody you feel safe with here, you give at least one person a hug before you leave.